So last time we looked at the whole temple bureaucracy, we looked at the Levium and the whole cycle of scheduling for the Levium working in the Beit Mikdash, and the Shorim and the Shorim, the maintenance, the sort of the bureaucracy side, and the ones who did the actual ceremony. So the next perek, which is here we are, Divrei Yamim Chaf Zayin, deals with the civil bureaucracy. This is David's administration, all of his ministers. And it really has three different sets of authorities. There's the national administration, all of his sarim around tribe everything, the tribal administration, the nasi of each specific shevet, which is kind of, I assume it was like a state government. They had some autonomy to run things, but not everything. And something that's called David's giborim, his heroes. They're the ones who had been with him since day one, since he was a bandit king in the and Midbar Yehuda, the ones who were with him when he was king in Hebron, they had stayed with him. And they're all names. Some of the names are familiar, but there are a lot of names there. And it seems to form in the structure as laid out in Divrei Yamim, this parallel branch government. And Chazal say that they were David's Sanhedrin, turning them from military leaders into rabbinical ones, and that they filled what we call the judicial and legislative roles. There's no separation of powers the way you have in the Constitution. And we assume that they started as military, they started with David, and they grew into the role, just like David grew into this role of being the king. And so how did David's government work? We have a brief summary of that in the end of Sefer Shmuel. We looked at this in Perek Chaf, Shmuel Bet, and says, Yoav, that Yoav was in charge of the army. Yoav ben Tzruya, David's nephew. Yahu ben Yoyada, ala kreti v'apleti, and Benoni ben Yada, who was over the, we talked about the kreti pleti as being another sort of palace guard, and again, the another kind of Sanhedrin as a group of lawmakers. V'aduram alamas, and Aduram was in charge of the levy of getting people to work. And he will play a prominent role under Shlomo, because he's going to be Shlomo's head of the Mas as well, and he'll end up being assassinated by the people when Rechavam, his son, tries to overwork them. Yoshafat ben Ehud, and he's got a secretary, Shua is a sofer, recorder, Tzedok Eviatar Kohanim, Tzedok and Eviatar with two Kohanim Gedolim, we talked about them. Gam Ira Hayiri, the name we haven't seen before, who Haya Kohen le David, he was David's personal Kohen. We're not going to deal with that. We talked about that quite a bit when we talked about this parak here. And we have a similar summary in Divrei Yamim. Summarize this, but it starts out with the Vayimloch David al Kol Yisrael. David was king all over Israel. Again, summary of his rule. V'yoseh mishpat utzedakah l'chol amo, and that was rule. He did justice and charity for all the people. Yoav ben Tzruya ala tzava, Yoav was in charge of the army, Yoshafat ben Lehud mazkir, the secretary, Tzadok ben Achitub, Avimelech ben Yav and Aviatar Kohanim, two Kohen Gadol, Yoshashah Sofer, the secretary, Bnei ben Yehuda ala kreti v'apleti, mentioned him, Bnei David HaRishonim, Liad HaMelech, and David's sons served him, except of course the ones who rebelled against him and were killed or died. So all of Sefer Shmuel is about the sons of David. And we spent, I looked back at it was actually 4 hours looking at those titles and what each of those meant and how they put together. And the shiur from like 4 years ago called Happily Ever After. Now, Divrei Yamim Perek of Zion has a much longer list of ministers and lots of names, because Divrei Yamim is all about the names. And we're going to list everybody's name because everybody's related to somebody, and Ezra's got to list everybody's name. But I'm not going to look at the names so much as the titles. So I thought that was interesting. These are the people that needed to have cabinet level positions in David's in ancient Israel. And it starts out Al Shrot HaMelech, Azumot Ben Adiel. So the storehouses, the treasure houses, is one person. And then the storehouses in the fields, Ba'arim, Ba'chvarim, Migdalot, and he had storehouses in of the fields of the produce in cities and all the small towns and in towers in I guess fortresses that Yonatan Ben Yo. Well, the same Lechel HaSadeh and Department of Agriculture, those who were working in the fields, he had a minister, Levadat HaDamah, for working in the field, Uzri Ben Kaluv, Bal Karmim, another minister for the vineyards, Al Sheba Kramim, and another minister is in charge of turning the grapes into wine and storing those. Bashkamim, and on the for the olives and the figs, Ashabishvela that were in the valley, Balchanana Gedri, and another someone in charge of the oil after you've gotten out of the olives, named Yoash, Bal Bakar, Aroim Basharon, and for the cattle that were grazing in the Sharon in the north, it was Shitri Asharani, Abakar Babakim, and then the cattle that were in the valleys in the south, the Shabbat Ben Adli, Bagamalim, and in charge of the camels, yes, they had their own department, Oviel Yishmaeli, Baltanot, and on the donkeys, Yehudia Maranati, Balatzon, Yaziza Hagri, and another minister in charge of the sheep, Kol Ela Sarei Rechush Asher LaMelech David. These were the Sarim that were in charge of the livestock. And Yonatan Dod David and David's uncle Yonatan was Yoetz, was an advisor, Yishmevin B'soferhu, person of understanding, and a scribe, Yechiel ben Chachmoni, al b'nei HaMelech, and Yechiel ben Chachmoni, that is, was in charge of the other princes, keeping them in line, Achitofel Yoetz LaMelech, and Achitofel was an advisor to the Melech, and we know from this name that this list goes way back. This isn't the list at the end of his reign, because Achitophel, of course, ends up siding with Absalom and ends up committing suicide when Absalom's rebellion falls apart. So at least in the beginning, Achitophel was an advisor to the king, but Hushai Arki, Rei HaMelech, and Hushai, who also comes up on David's side during Absalom's rebellion, was the king's friend. I guess that was the title. Achitophel. And once Achitophel was gone, then Yehoyada ben Yehoyahu, Abiatar, then Yehoyada and Abiatar, who were mentioned before as on were David's advisors. Sorry, Saval HaMelech, Yoav, and Yoav is still the general. He stays there the whole time, even though David tries to get rid of him. And so this is overwhelmingly looks like an agricultural society, right? That's the ones who are in charge of all about all the livestock and all the crops there. The other interesting thing is that with some of these names, we have Shimai Haramati, we have Yaziz HaHegri, and we have Uviel HaYishmaeli, that they have toponyms, meaning names after places, rather than patronyms. They're not Ben something. They're not named after the fathers there. Their names are by the places. And there's some discussion what that means. So one thought is that there were foreigners. He says he's Yishmaeli, means he's a person from Yishmael. That's the way the Malbim says it, source 4. Yishmaeli, Amaronati, I agree, all those place names, toponyms. B'nei Nechar Hayu, they were foreigners. Well, that, and we see from Yeshaya that Yeshaya promised that when we are living in our land in peace, doing Hashem's will, then other nations will help us, but Amdu Zarim, that strangers will come, and they will be the shepherds for your sheep, and foreigners will be your farmers and your vintners and take care of your vineyards. They're the ones who are experts in doing whatever this work. The guy from Ishmael was expert at caring for camels, so he was put in charge. So the Radak says, no, that when it says Yishmaeli, it doesn't mean someone who is from Yishmael. These were all part of Bnei Israel. They lived in other places. That's what Radak says, Yishmaeli, should go rare Be'eretz Yishmael. He had dwelt in the land of Yishmael. Lefichach karu Yishmaeli, that's why they called him the Yishmaeli. Like be named Pollock or be named Ashkenazi. Kain Hagri, should go rare Be'eretz Bnei Hagar. Same with the other place names. By the way, it emphasizes that this wasn't an isolated or isolationist kingdom here. Their relationships with other nations, people would move from one to the other. There's a whole network of international migration that's going on over here. We don't get a sense of that from Shmuel. It's all very localized, just looking at Levin in his own personal life. This is a country here. So that was his administration. That's the cabinet. Then we have the leaders of each Shevet. Listen, our parak, I'll say Te Israel, the Reuveni, Nagid Eliezer ben Zichri, Shimoni, Levi, etc. Each one has their names, but I have nothing else to say about them. Ela Sarei Shevet Israel, we don't know anything about them at all. So I'll have to pass by them. The interesting list is the Giborim. The Rambam goes to a lot of detail, listing all of them. These are all of David's men who we'll see go back way back with him. And they're organized in a schedule, with each of them serving for a month out of the year. Like we talked about the Mishmarot with Kohanim and Levim, each one would serve for 1 week out of with a cycle of 48, a cycle of 24 rather. These were just 1 month out of the year, so each one would serve for 1 month. And it was re repeat each year. And this is the way Divrei Yamin puts it. B'nai Yisrael l'mispara. And B'nai Yisrael, for all their numbers, Roshei Havot, V'Serei Alafim, the heads of the families, and the leaders of 1,000, B'amemot, and the hundreds, Shotreihem, and their police officers, enforcers, Mashartim HaTamela, all of those who serve the king, L'chol Devar HaMachlakot, and they would serve the king in every way, and they had divisions that would come and go, 1 month at a time, for each month. And within each division, there were 24,000 men. So this is a huge bureaucracy, huge organization. So every month, they were replaced by another group of 24,000. Again, these are the judges, the legislators. For the local judiciary, I think more than anything else, called the Sanhedrin. And it gives the names. First month, Yishbam ben Zevdiel, Estrim, and he had 24,000. And then the second one, Dodiah Chazati, lots of names, and everyone had 24,000. It goes through all the names every month, 24,000 total. And here, and the Tzar Sabashli. See, the third month, the Choshashli was Binyahu ben Yehoyada. We saw Yehoyada ben Binyahu was David's advisor. This is his son, Binyahu, named after his father, so named after his grandfather. Kohen Rosh, Amachlako, Esrim Rabba Aleph, and he had 24,000 in his group as well. Hubinayahu Gibor Hashloshim Baal Hashloshim. He was a hero among the 30. And that name is going to come up. That term is going to come up a lot of what the 30 are. Because that's the term for David's inner circle of these Diborim. Right? The allies who had been with him from the beginning. They are the 30. And this organization goes way back. As we know that, because here we go, the fourth month. Ravi Lachodesh Haravi, Ravi Lachosh Ravi, for the fourth month. The leader was Asael Achi Yoav. Asael, the brother of Yoav. Yoav ben Tzruya. And we know about Asael. You remember Asael. Yoav's brother was killed back when David was king in Hebron. And David's king of Yehuda and Hebron. Ishbosheth is king of Yisrael and Machanaim. And there's this war between them. Asael was killed early on. As I'm going to just go back to that story then. This is in Shmuel Bet, Perek Bet, very beginning of the story. My name is Vayusham Shloshab and Yoav Abishai Asael. Yoav was the general Abishai, who is another one of David's military leaders, and Asahel, the third brother. Asael Kalbarag Love, Kecharad Savimash Asael was light on his feet as a deer in the field. But Yudof Asael Achrei Abner. So Asael, during this battle, is chasing after Abner, who is the general of Ishbosheth's army. He's going to kill him. But Atal Lechera Yemina small, who didn't swerve left or right, Mechrei Abner. He's chasing after Abner. Abner's running away. Amir turns and tries to convince Asael to stop chasing him. If you keep chasing me, I'm going to kill you. Because you may be fast, but I'm stronger. By Mehen and Asael refused to turn, by Achaeo Avner, and Avner attacked him by Choreachani with his butt spike, with the back end of his spear, El Chomesh, in the liver. But Sei Teachanit Mecharav, and it went through him. Spear went through him by a polshon by a mut tachtav, and he dies there. At Avner's feet, we call a bal makomash and a falsham asael by a mut, and so everyone who sees this death by a mut stopped in horror. So when Asael was David's li leader of his giborim for this fourth month, by the time we get to this story, he is long since gone. So it says, Revi'i Asael Achi Yoav, Zvadya Beno Acharav, and his son Zvadya took over for him. And then the list continues on from there. So each of them had an organization of 24,000 men. They're organized as Sarei Alafim Vameyot Beshotreihem, organized as the leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, which may refer to the military organization, because that's the term used for basically colonels and lieutenants and sergeants, Sarei Alafim, Sarei. But these are Mishartim HaMelech, they're serving the king. So I'm assuming this is more the judiciary side. These are the judges going down to being local judges. And this is the structure that Moshe had set up way back when they left Mitzrayim, beginning of Parshat Yitro. When Moshe is just trying to judge everybody, and Yitro comes to him and says, "V'yomer chatan Moshe elav," and Moshe's father-in-law tells him, "L'tova davar asher atah oseh. What you're doing is no good. Everyone's coming to you for judgment. You can't do it. You need to have some kind of hierarchy. Navol tibol gam ata gam ha'am hazeh asher imach. You're going to be exhausted. The people are going to be exhausted. Yikaved mimcha davar. This is too hard for you. Lo tuchal so dachi. You can't do it by yourself. Atah shema b'kolis. And now listen to me. I'll give you advice. And God should be with you and should agree to it. You're going to serve in God's stead. You're going to be the leader. You'll give me the final word. And you will bring their questions to God if they need to go straight to God. And you'll teach them the laws. You'll teach them how to act. And all the things they should do. But you need to choose from the people. Anche chayel, strong men, Yerelokim, who fear God, Anche emet, truthful, Sonei betza, who hate bribery. Samtalehem, and you will set them as Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meot, Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Asarot. These will be the judges. Have a judge that's over 1,000 people, over 100, all the way down to over 10. They will judge the people at all times. Anything that's too hard, they'll bring to you. You should be to him. They'll judge the smaller things. The things should go easier for you. They will bear the job with you. So that's what these Sarei Alafim here for David as well. David can't do all this. I mean, one of the main roles of a king was to be the shofet, to be the final judge. He can't do it himself, so he's got this whole organization. That's what we mean by a Sanhedrin, system of judges and of legislators too that make the laws. But unlike the Sanhedrin, and like this organizational vim that David set up, there's no perm bureaucracy. They all go through it. They are served for a month at a time, and then they go back home to their fields. And I like to think this is like this was a quote from. When the Continental Congress trying to set up the government, the Constitution, and he was arguing for term limits. As he says, that a rotation of government is important in truly Republican institutions. It's important to have a rotation because if we don't have rotation, then people end up being professional politicians. And he says, the office is perpetually confined to a few, then other men of equal talents and virtue, but not possessed of so extensive an influence. May be discouraged of aspiring to it. That other people, if we leave people as permanent politicians, legislatures, then other people who might be good at it won't be able to have their opinions offered. And the other problem of having a permanent government, as it says here, they become a measure of fixed body, often inattentive to the public good, callous, selfish, and a fountain of corruption. Which I'm not going to say anything on contemporary politics or contemporary Israeli politics, but having people in office for too long inevitably leads to them being just separate from the people. So I think that this is part of what's going on over here. I have no evidence that David's system was meant to be that way. Doesn't say anything, just says they're on for 1 month on, 11 months off. We don't know why. I'd like to think that they're prevent corruption, and hopefully it helped. I don't know. That's my own way of thinking about what they're doing over here. So this list here, going back to the actual list, if you look at those names, there are 12. Each is the leader of one of these machlokot, one of these divisions. But within those names, it's actually part of a much longer list of names. And the list of Giborim, David's heroes, is in Perek Yud-Aleph, and it's long. And it goes on, and it goes on, and on, and on, and on, and on, and on. We're not going to go through all of them. We're going to go through a couple of the stories here. And it starts with the Ela Rosh HaGiborim, Michel David. These are the Giborim. These are David's men. Mechazkimi, who's kept, who strengthened him, who supported him in his kingship, Im Kol Yisrael, along with the rest of Israel, Bamericho, Kidvar Hashem al Yisrael, and they made him king, as God promised. As God had promised over all of Israel. Ela Mispar Giborim Michel David, and this is the list. Mispar here, not so much the number as the stories of these Giborim. And go ahead and read the whole list. That's fine. There are 53 names on the list. And again, they're called the Shloshim. They're called the 30. But that's not really read that way. They're not really 30 of them. They're more than that. But there's a creative there that they really should be read not as Shloshim, the 30 Bez Shalishim, meaning the third in command. You see that in when Para when in Parsha B'Shalach, when Paro chases after Bnei Israel before the splitting of the Red Sea, that Paro takes 600 of his elite chariots, called Rechav Mitzrayim and all cavalry, the Shalishim al Kulo, and Shalishim on all of them, which the Targum is Giborim. Again, these are the heroes, the strong men. But the implication is that they are the third level of command. David's Melech. Yoav is Tsar Tzava, second in command. We have the name of Yishpam ben Chachmeni, who's the Rosh HaShalishim, who's the head of them, the second in command of the judiciary. And this of Shlishim, or the Shloshim, is not the 30 of them, but the next chain. They're the third in line. David, Yoav, and then these Shlishim. And the first four of them in that list have stories. The rest are just names. And again, I'm not going to go through that whole list of the names in Divrei Yamim, because I don't know what to do with them. But the parallel in Sefer Shmuel is almost identical, except it ends early. Again, it starts with Ela Shmuel Giborim Hashel David. These are the names of David's men, of David's heroes, as Yeshev Bashevet Techachmeni, Rosh HaShlishi, that he was the head of the Rosh HaShlishi, the third in command. Who Adino Haetzani, he was also known as Adino Haetzani, because Shemana Shmona Meot Halal, and he killed 800 of the enemy in one time. That's the story. And it goes on. That's Pasuk Chet, it goes on, one name to the other, until Pasuk Lamed Tet, Uri Achiti, in this list, Kol Shloshim V'Shiva, in all 37. So instead of the full list, they stop early at 37. And Sefer Shmuel, I want to look at. And look at those names. When we did Sefer Shmuel, we skipped Perek Chaf Gimel with this list of names. So I wanted to look at all the narrative parts, the story of his life, the story of his reign. So now I want to go back and look at more, these are more poetic parts, the list of them. And Sefer Shmuel doesn't go into the long list of names like the Rambam. It has a different purpose. It's Sefer Nevuah, and the stories have moral messages. So that if we're look, we've got a list of names, they've got to be some kind of message there. Otherwise, it doesn't belong to Sefer Nevuah. So my assumption is that the text of Sefer Shmuel is meant to be read more symbolically. We need to look at the Midrashim. It is intended to be read, as it were, midrashically. Don't worry about the actual names. What is the message? What are the meal? What do they mean? We did something similar when we looked at these little stories of David's final wars in Perek Chaf Aleph and Shmuel, and then Perek Chaf and Divrei Yamim. And I assume that Divrei Yamim is the chronicle. It's a copy of the historical record written much later, there to kind of give Bnei Israel a history as they're coming back in the time of Ezra. But the stories in Shmuel are poetic retellings. They're not about the historical characters. They're telling us about David himself. And that's the way the Gemara puts it. These are David's heroes. My Kamar, what is that coming to tell us? Kamar. This is what it means. These are the names, the titles, the stories of David's own heroism. These are the characteristics of David. So this list of names and all the exploits of these, kills by 800 with this in a single day, they tell us of David's exploits. Using the language of the chronicles that would be end up being recorded in Sefer Divrei Yamim. So all these long lists of names that we have has a midrashic meaning. But you can always find a midrashic meaning to a name, right? Midrashim are full of that. For example, we look at Korach. This is the Yalbish money. And it says, Vayikach Korach, why is he called Korach? Just like Karcha b'Yisrael, that it basically that he made a bald spot, created shame for Israel. And Korach was Ben Yitzar, Shiratiach Olam Kulo Katzarayim, that he burned the world like at noon. Ben Kahat, Kahat, it's a name, but no, Shakashinav, she named Molido, that he set the teeth of his parents on edge. We take all these names and give them a negative side because this is Korach rebelled against David. So Korach embarrassed Israel. Yitzhar exposed them. Kahat was Haked Shinav, as we say in the Haggadah, set the teeth on edge. Ben Levi, Shneser Levi El Gehenom, was Levi because he was escorted to Gehenom. And then the Midrash interestingly says about this, about Korach, when the Torah lists Korach's history, it says Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehat ben Levi, lichshev nami ben Yaakov, and it stops there. It doesn't say ben Yaakov. And it said we would interpret that negatively too. So that he fooled himself into going to hell. And on that it says Yaakov became rachamim atzmo. And then Yaakov said, "Now please, don't include me with them." It says, may not be part of them. So you can always have this, we try to take the story and then we make this midrashic interpretation of the name there. So we would do that with all of the names in our list. Assuming they're all positive. Since our list, instead of going through all 53 names, stops abruptly. It stops at Uri HaChiti. I think that makes a point. That the author of Sefer Shmuel is giving up. We can say positive things about David. This all represents David's honesty or strength or whatever. But once you get to the name Uri HaChiti, we're not going to make it a midrashic interpretation. That wasn't one of Gvurotav Shel David. That Uriah was a story of his failure. And so by ending the list there, it reminds us of that David's not perfect. Still have the story of Bathsheba and Uriah behind him. And I'm not going to go through all the names on that list. It's just too long. I want to look at the first four. The first four of those names have stories associated with them. And we'll start looking at those. So the list of names starts with Elos Mar Giborim Shel David. These are David's Giborim. Again, we're interpreting them about David himself, Midrashic. And the first one's name is Yoshev Basheva Tachkumoni. And in Divrei Yamim, his actual name was Yishbam ben Chachmoni. We've changed the name of the person. He was Rosh HaShlishi, one of the heads of the again of the Shlishim of the Thursday command. Adino Etzani and it was called that Etzano because he had killed 800 and one at one time. That was a military exploit. So the Gemara tries to explain why are we changing the name? We change it to Yoshev Bashevet Tachkamoni. It says it's referring to David. Yoshev Bashevet means the one who sits among those who are seated, sitting. So David was didn't dominate over his Sanhedrin, his group of advisors. He was like the court of primum inter pares, first among equals, like Arthur, King Arthur at the Round Table. There is no head of the table. This is Gemara talking about Yoshev Bashevet. When David would be sitting in his yeshiva, now that's an anachronistic word, but among his advisors, he didn't sit on cushions or on a throne. He sat on the ground. That as long as we quoted before this name of Ira Iri was a Kohen of David, as long as Ira was alive, that Iria would teach the rabbis would teach these other Gibarim, he'd be the leader there, the advisor, Agabe Karim Kosatot. He was sitting on some kind of high cushioned chair. He knocked off chair when he died. David took his place and would be the literally teaching the rabbis. Again, I think that's a little bit of an anachronism, but deciding the law with his Sanhedrin, he was sit on the ground. Amrulay, they said to him, you should sit on pillows, you should sit on cushions. You don't have to sit on the ground, you're the king. And he refused to do it. He refused to lord himself over everybody else. And so he was called Tachkamoni. Again, changing the name. And Amarav, Rav says, is upon Amrulay Kosh Baruch Hu, so that Hashem said, because of this, since you minimize yourself, you will pray yourself, you'll be tachkamon, you'll be like me. At the level of Kadosh Baruch Hu, Taniko Zera Bizei Rav Atama Batla. I will make commands, and you can battle them, you can overdo them. I will give you that power. Therefore, you will be Rosh HaShlishi. Again, interpreting this midrashically, not as the third in command, but you, David, will be Tiyah Rosh L'Shosh HaTavot. You will be in there among the Avot, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Summarize Gemara, it's David's humility here. He's not going to lord over the rest of his advisors. He's going to be one of them, and therefore he can be like the L'Shosh HaTavot in a very specific sense. And that's the Gemara we talked about. That's really the introduction to the story of Bathsheba. Amrav Yehuda Amarav. Lolam al yavi adam atzmo l'dei nisayon. You should never ask to be tested. Don't say, well, test me and I'll pass the test. Chere David melech Yisrael hevi atzmo l'dei nisayon. David asked to be tested and he failed. We know this test. Amrav Fara. This is the way the Gemara puts David's presentation to Hashem. Ribbono shel Olam. Neima omrim elokei Avraham, elokei Yitzchak, elokei Yaakov. Ve'ein omrim elokei David. Why is it Torah in our tefillah we say elokei Avraham, we say God of Avraham, God of Yitzchak, we say God of Yaakov. We never say God of David. I want to be one of them. I want people to talk about elokei David. That we dive into elokei Avraham, saying our relationship to Hashem is like Avram's relationship with Hashem. Avram represents us. David wants that status as well. That's really what Tehillim is about, that this is David's prayer, and he wants us to be doing the same thing. So he claims to Hashem, why can't I be like the Avot, be one of the Avot, be sort of the one who sets the relationship in Israel with Hashem. So Amar, so Hashem says back, Inu Minesu Li, they were tested. They passed the test. But you were never tested. So David says, okay, fine, test me. And we have a story that David, Hashem says, Fine, I'll test you. I'll tell you what. Not only am I gonna test you, I'm gonna tell you what the test is gonna be about. It's gonna be about Yul HaRayot, and Amiyad, what happens by Yil Erev, that's when David gets up, goes on the roof, he sees Bathsheba. We know what happened. We looked at this Gemara when we looked at Bathsheba. The name of that shiur was called, this will be on the final, because it's like a test, and when David fails. And so the Gemara continues to say that's why this particular story says that Shmona Me'or Chalal B'Pamacha, that David killed, or Shevet killed 800 at a time. What does 800 at a time mean? Why do I care? What does that even mean? What does that do with anything? So the Gemara continues. Ashmona Me'or Chalal B'Pamacha. That's the pasuk. Jezorek chetz, that he would fire an arrow, and he'd kill 800 in a single battle. But David would complain about the missing 200. What missing 200? It's because the pasuk says in Parsha Zinu, when we're doing God's will, if they were wise, then they would understand their fate. How could one person chase after 1,000? If God's with us, then every one soldier will be able to take on 1,000 the enemy. That's the pasuk there. Pasuk here says 800. David's saying, wait a minute, why can't I get 1,000? What am I doing? Why am I only getting 800? So the answer to that, in the midrashic sense, is he quotes, that David did everything right in the eyes of God, and never veered from what he was commanded all the days of his life, except for the one issue of Uriah. Well, story about Sheba and Uriah, that was David's mistake. So that's why you're not getting to 1,000. We're taking a couple points off on this test. So, as we know, that's a great book. Life is a test. And this midrashic reading of this parak says that David's grade on the final get 800 out of 1,000. 8%, that's a pretty good for B. If you want to know how the Navi judges David, here's the answer. 80%. Oh, why we should get that good a grade on the test of life? I don't know if I'm going to quit making 80 or not. We're both just right. That's kind of the midrashic reading of this little piece over here. The next little story is about the next of the Giborim, Eliezer ben Dodo. And it says, Acharav Eliezer ben Dodo ben Achati, Shlosha Giborim im David, and he was one of the three of David's men, Bakar Pamba b'Plishtim, when they humiliated the Plishtim. So this goes back to the wars against the Philistines. Nesru Shal Milchama, that they all gathered there, the Plishtim were gathered for battle. Ayilu Ish Yisrael and Bnei Yisrael literally went up, parallel to in the Rambam says the Am Nasu, they ran away. So they're in battle. Eliezer ben Dodo is there. Bnei Yisrael have retreated for the Plishtim. Who come? And Eliezer gets up. Ayach Plishtim, and he kept attacking the Plishtim. Ad ki yageya do. Until his hands got tired, but he literally cleaved his hand to the sword. And Hashem saved him. He was exhausted, but he kept fighting. And Hashem did made this great salvation. And so the people came back afterwards, just to plunder the loot, to plunder the bodies. And the parallel in Divrei Yamin gives the context to that, and it says, "Achrav etc." And Huya im David b'pasdamim. He was with David. This battle is b'pasdamim. What's pasdamim? The answer is way back. That was the battle with Goliath. Before David was king, when David was just the lute player for Shaul. It says, by Plishtim gathered from their war, and they went to the city of Shocho, Azaka, and they were between Shochar and Azza, Be'efes Damim, this place called Efes Damim. And that's when the story of Elzer ben Dodo occurred. And that was where by Tse'isha Benim, Machab Lishim, Goliath Shemo, he got that. Goliath comes out then. That's the story of Goliath. So this story here, in its original form, goes back all the way to the time of David and Goliath. Now, there are no Midrashim on this. Couldn't find any. But there is a more contemporary source. So, 18th century. Not really contemporary. And this is a commentary called the Gan Na'or by Naftali Hertz Rustley, who was a colleague of Moses Mendelssohn and helped write the Biur, which is Mendelssohn's German translation of Tanakh. It's kind of controversial because it wasn't really religious there, but the commentary is interesting. And what he's looking at is this comment here about he was tired, but he literally, his hand cleaved to the sword. He's stuck. It says that tidbak has a symbolic word. Because there's a mitzvah of dvekut. It says that's metaphoric for being, for dvekut, to being close to God. And the Gemara on that says, lavashem your responsibility is to love God and to cleave to him. If Sharla Damli Debekri now, can a person possibly be literally cleaved to Hashem? Incorporeal. You can marry into a Tamil Chacham family, Osef Prachmati Tamil Chachamim, do business with them, Mahana Tamil Chachamim, and support Tamil Chachamim from your possessions. That counts as being close to Hashem. Supporting those who are Talmidei Chachamim. That's what the Vekut is. So the way Wesley says it, it's the Vekut Gufani. The word Vekut can mean physically being close to, attached to. Mo that he back the like our pasuk that he literally attached his hand to the sword. It means literally one thing close to another. Yeah, that the highest form of dvekut, spiritual dvekut to Hashem. That's impossible. You can't ask when it says to be close to Hashem. You can't ask for everyone to do that. Not everyone's on that kind of spiritual level. So that's why the Sifri says the be close to Chachamim, Talmidei Hem, and the students. It's like you are close to Hashem. But when the Sifrei says, don't think that they're completely eliminating the possibility. They forgot the idea of actually being spiritually close to Hashem. But they spoke intentionally. They realized how hard it was. At Hamon al Shimitat that we can't command everyone to be at a spiritual level that we call close to Hashem, Hashem. That's impossible. That's something that's only for Liray Hashem as he quotes from Malachi. That's his. You can't control that. We're not always at that level. So they said, even so. Even though the pleasant, what really would like you to be, be at that spiritual level, you can talk about being. If you can't, then at least be close to Chachamim, to those who are can achieve that level of the Bekut. Hashem will consider that you've done it good enough. Go to Shirim, keep learning, do your best. And this level of dvekut is possible for anybody. It says that this is an example of David as well. David is not a Navi. He's not a Talmud Chacham in that sense. He's got teachers throughout all of this, but he is the one who's going to support them. He's going to allow them to be the Chachamim and to have that dvekut, and that's David's dvekut here. That's the second story. The third story is very strange. And it just begs for a compendium Midrashic reading, because you can't possibly read it straight. So we'll read it right here. Acharav, the next one was Shema ben Agri Harari. And Vesu Plishtim Lachaya. And this happened when the Plishtim, again, this is way back the word Plishtim, when they gathered together in the city of Lachaya, Batisham Chakara Sadeh. And there was a field there full of lentils. And the people ran away from the Plishtim. And he stood in this field, and he saved it. Attacked the Plishtim. There was a great salvation. So, what was the story of saving the field? And then, so three of his of David's. Shim, Shlishim, Rosh of the of his third in commands, and they came in the time of the harvest. El David, El Marat Adullam. They came to David in the cave of Adullam, where he was in Midbar Yehuda. And a group of Plishtim were in the valley of Rephaim. David Azmusudah. David was in his fortress out in the middle of the wilderness. Matzav Plishtim Az Beit Lechem. And there were the garrison of Plishtim in Beit Lechem. And David desired, had a desire, and he said, "Mi yashkeni mayim mibe'er Beit Lechem asher basham." Who can get me water from the well of Beit Lechem that's in the gate of Beit Lechem? I'm here. I'm fighting the Plishtim. We're here in this wilderness fortress in the middle of Midbar Yehuda. I want water from Beit Lechem. Who can get me some? Like I said, it's very weird. So three of his heroes, these three that were mentioned, Plishtim, they snuck into the camp of Plishtim, and they took water from the well of Beit Lechem, that was in the gate, and they brought it to David. But David refused to drink it, and he poured it out as a libation to God. God forbid I should do such a thing. I risked the lives of these men who went to go get me this water. So he didn't want to drink it then. This was the story of the three heroes. Very weird. The battle of Plishtim is in the field of it's in a field of lentils, and David wants water, the water from Beit Lechem, so they get the water, and then David refuses to drink the water. And understanding is a much more complicated sugya in the Gemara, so I'm going to go through one kind of path through that, the whole discussion. But the assumption is that when it says, "I want water from Beit Lechem," it can't be talking about water. Mayim is a metaphor for Torah. And the Shaar, it's a metonym, it's a correct substitution for the Bet Din. So he's asking for a Torah ruling from the Bet Din that's in Beit Lechem. He needs to make a decision of what he can do, what he can ethically do as he's fighting the Plishtim. He wants to find someone who's got some kind of Masorah, some kind of Torah answer. Dov is asking for a lucky decision. Puna Omer. So what was the question? Gidishim disarim Yisrael. This field of lentils, where the Plishtim were all gathered, that belonged to a Jew. Havi Matamri Plishtim Bahu, and that the Plishtim were hiding there. So David's question was, can I destroy that field? Can I save myself by destroying someone else's property? Can I save myself with someone else's money? That was the question he was asking about this field. That's where he needs a medical terms. He needs an ethics consult, like right now, because I'm going to attack them. I'm going to destroy that field. The whole field's going to be wiped out if I fight them. Am I allowed to do that? Sholchule. So that's what these ones who snuck into Beit Lechem were getting the mayim from the shaar, the water from the gate, literally, the Torah from the Beit Din. Figuratively. And so they answered him. They brought back. Asulat. You can't do that. You can't save yourself with your fellow's property, with your fellow's money. And Tosfot will add that if it's pure nefesh, yes, you can, but you're obligated to pay it back. So his question is more, do I have to pay them back? Do I have to be reimbursed, whoever owned this field here? I'm going to talk to Jim. It's going to be destroyed. And the answer is general no. Avot HaMelech, but you are a king. And a king has right of eminent domain. He can literally breach fences and to in order to make a path, and no one can stop him. You have the power to do that. So David gets that response, and then lo ava David lishtotam. David refused to drink that water, meaning Amar kaven deika isura. Since it's morally wrong to do that, lo nichale. I'm not going to do it. So Vayesach tell Hashem, he poured it out for God, meaning Mishum da Abba L'Shem Shemayim. He did it for the same Shemayim that, you know, I'm not going to stand on my rights as the king to take this without paying. We destroy the field, we'll have to repay them all. Another example of David's humility. In the first case, he's not sitting above his Sanhedrin. He's willing to listen to them and support them. He's not going to take advantage of his status as king. Won't destroy the field of another one. That's the third story. The next story is the story of Avishai ben Tsruya. We know him well, he comes up all the time. And it's Avishai, Achi Yoab ben Tsruya, who Rosh HaShlishi. He was the head again of the one of the heads of the Shlishi of the group, who Orer and Chanito al Shlosha Mirchala, and he attacked 300 with his spear. Veloshe, he's one of the famous among the three. He's more honored than the three, literally the three previous heroes that were mentioned. He's Lahem, he's one of the leaders of them, but he wasn't actually one of these top three in terms of military power. That's the little reading. There's no midrashim on it. The Zohar takes these Lahem Loba in a Kabbalistic sense. That Shosha is the Gimel Rishonot Chain Chachma Bina V'Dat, again, wisdom. That David is the same sense. He is a sar on them. He's a leader, organized those, but he's not one of them. He doesn't have that divine wisdom, Chachma Bina V'Dat. He may have a little bit of Ruach Kodesh, but he's not a Navi. He's not the carrier of the Torah. He's not the Rav, but he's going to be the leader of them. And the next story, the last, I guess there's five here, not four. Is about Benyahu ben Yehoyada, who is the head of the Kredu Pleti, again, head of this of one of the Sanhedrins, one of the groups of advisors to David, described as a Ben Ishchai, the son of a living man, which in Divrei Yom Yisrael Chayil is a powerful man. Rav Polum Mikavatz El, head of those who served in Kavatz El's place, because at Shnei Ha'ariel Moav. And he killed two of the leaders of Moab, who are Rav, Hikat Ari, Betoch HaBe'er, and he went down, he killed a lion in a well on a snowy day. Again, one of these little things like, wait, what does that mean? We need some kind of midrashic interpretation. Hikat Ish Mitzri, Asher Ish Mar'eh, and he killed an impressive looking Egyptian, Uvia Mitzri Chanit, and Egyptian had a spear. Uriah loved Bathsheba and Benayahu only had a staff. Like Zelda Chanit Miara Mitzri, and he stole the Egyptian's spear, gave a Chanito and killed him with his own spear. This is what Benayahu ben Yehoyada did. And he again had a name among the three, along with those three heroes. Nechbad, he was one of the most honored among the Shlishim of the third in command. But he wasn't part of that top three. And David made him an advisor. We saw that. So, what does all that mean? Gemara and Brachot, yeah, midrashically. He was called a Ben Yishchai, son of a living man. And everybody else, the Gemara asks, are sons of dead people? I mean, what does that mean? Ben Yishchai, he was a son of an Yishchai, that He's a tzaddik that even after they're dead, they're considered alive. Yeah, taking this as a metaphor for David about his father Yishai as being a tzaddik. So David was the son of a tzaddik, the rab of Poalim ben Mekabatzel, and he was one of the workers of Kabatzel. Taking that midrashically, Shariba v'kibet Poalim laTorah. He increased the numbers worked, the number who worked, and gathered them to Kel for Torah. He brought people into learning Torah. He caught Shnei Ariel Moav and the two Ariel, literally the leaders, the lion-like heroes of Moab, but midrashically, Ariel is used as a term for the Beit Midrash. Nothing like him, either in the first Beit Midrash or the second Beit Midrash. And it says he went and killed the lion in the well on the snowy day. Again, this has got to be metaphoric, because what else do we care about killing lions? You know, there those who say that it was a well, it was a snowy day, and he was a struggle of the lion. He broke the ice and went and did tefillah, used as a mikveh in a snowy day. Either Amri, and there are those who say the Tana Sifrei Dibei Rav, that he learned the Sifra, the Midrash HaHalacha, or the Halachot on Sefer VaYikra, which Tosfos says that that's the meaning of Ari, the lion, Darshu Chamor b'Sifrim, that's one of the hardest to learn. Yom HaDestava, it was on the winter days, he would sit there and learn Sifra. So fighting the lion in the snow, a metaphor for learning Torah, even if it was possibly hard. You just try, you do your best. So summarizing all these Midrashim, are all read as David's humility. That Rotavshel David is Kovesha Yisro, as it said. Not his physical strength, not even David's wisdom, not learning, reading him as someone who's a chacham. You know, that's not David. It's his humility and willingness to submit to the rule of law as determined by other chachamim. And that's what it sums up. That's what it means to be a true Melech Yisrael. As the Torah says that that the king of Israel, that when he sits on his throne, and the king needs to make his own copy of the Torah. I'll say for write it down, write it down in front of the Kohanim who have the authoritative text. And he needs to be with him, he needs to read the Torah all his whole life. So he should learn to fear God, the Torah. Keep this Torah, and do these laws. His heart not become haughty over his brethren. So he shouldn't turn left or right. So that he lives long on his throne. He and his dynasty on among all Israel. And so that's what this, we read these psukim as being what tells us that, as we summarized before. He was doing justice for all the people. He did justice by listening to others and not trying to lord over them. That's the appropriate summary for David's Malchut. The best king of Israel. He still gets an 80, not 100 on the test, but that's not too bad. And we'll stop here.